Good evening, everybody. Welcome. Nice to see everybody. Nice to see you all. Thank you for your warm wishes. Be'ezus Hashem, tonight we'll continue with the Malach of Kosev with some very, very practical applications. A little bit of technology we'll get to, but first let's review what we learned last week. We found out that the Malach of Kosev was the source in the Mishkan, of course, is from the fact that each of the boards, the krushim, and the Mishkan had to be in its proper place, because you don't want to change the place that you put the boards. You want to leave it kamish pato, kamish patam, as the Torah says, in its original place. And therefore we had to mark the boards. And the boards were marked. It's actually a question. Think about the following. If you want to mark boards, do you mark A, B, C, D, meaning one board is marked A, the next board in the Mishkan is B, the third board is C, or do you have Aleph on the edge of one board to match Aleph on the side of the other board? Bays on the side of one board to match bays on the opposite side of its matching board. Let me give you another possibility. If you would write Aleph, then how many letters are there in the Aleph bays? How many? How many letters are there in the Hebrew alphabet? Anyone know? Anyone know how many letters in the Hebrew alphabet? I'll give you a hint. You've learned it since you are... Yes, there are 22 letters. That is correct. It's actually interesting. I looked up last week for Shir. I'm teaching the Malach of Kosev. And there is an opinion. We don't pass like this. But the opinion of the Ra'avya, is one of the Ashkenazi Rishonim. He holds that you only are chayav for writing. And this is actually important. You're only chayav for writing in Hebrew and, for whatever reason, in Lashon Yevanis, in Greek character forms. We're not talking about the language of what you're writing about. We're talking about the character form of the letter itself. For whatever reason, that's his opinion based on Yerushalmi. And I wanted to know how that was going to match up. So I actually did some research and I found out that Hebrew has 22 letters. And I also found out that Greek has 24 letters. In case everyone's interested in how many letters are in the Greek alphabet, we know alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. We stop there. But for all of you who are in fraternities or sororities, you might know more letters than I. Actually, I have a guy in my shir who was in a different university, and he was in a fraternity there. And he said that in order to get into his fraternity, he had to actually know the Greek alphabet. But by the time he got to my shir, you know, yesterday morning, he no longer remembered the letters, nor did he remember how many letters there were. So, in Greek. Okay, so that's, so by the way, if there were 28 boards, how many were there? 20 on one side and 20 on the other side and 8 in the back, so that's 48 boards. If each board is labeled with an aleph, that's not going to work so well. Because you only get till tough, which is 22 out of the boards. You need to get 48. So that's a question you have to think about. Yeah.
Is there a difference between Sada Shuri and Ksava
Shuri? Excellent question. The way the Rav Yah says is that it's only in Ksava Shuri. Which is how we have our Sifrei Torah written, in that, you know, the biblical, what we think of as, what we're familiar with from Sifrei Torah, from Megillah Esther, that Ksav, that's only the Rav Yah. However, we assume, like most Rishonim, that you're Chayev, as the Mishnah says, Bechol Lashon. So if you write in English, you're Chayev, Skila, Darais. If you write in French, that was a joke. English and French are the same letters. If you write in Japanese, if you write in Egyptian hieroglyphics, if you write in Russian, all those letter forms, those scripts, will constitute an Issa D'Oraisa the way almost all the Rishonim, other than this one opinion of the Rav Yah, holds. So we don't really follow the Rav Yah, just for our own edification, it's edifying. Yeah?
So what's when you write Aleph in script, then you have two different characters, so according to one opinion, you would be Chayav?
That's a great question. If Aleph in script, which has two parts of the letter, if that considered one form or two forms, I would think that that's one, but I don't know the answer. I don't know.
Follow up to that question, the Ksav Ivri also have 22 letters, or do you
have more or less? I assume it's the same. Okay, but without getting into that. So last week we continued to learn that the... What else did we learn last week? That's where it happened. Right, the shiur, the quantity of the malacha in order to violate the Issa D'Oraisa is two letters minimum. One letter will be Aser D'Rabbanan, but not Aser D'Oraisa. But then we caught ourselves, and we reminded ourselves that whenever you have a shiur, a minimum quantity that the Torah prescribes, that's only to get punished. whatever the punishments of any specific violation is, but sometimes you could have a chatzi shiur, not chatzi, not meaning half, but less than a full quantity is still asur min ha-Torah, which is how we paskin, chatzi shiur asur min ha-Torah, and therefore, if you have a really, really, really bad headache on Yom Kippur, and you just want to take a tiny little sip of water to help you make it to shul, that is asur mida araisa, even though a lot of people don't realize that. And based on that same halacha, that you're not allowed to have the tiniest sip, even though, of course, Yom Kippur has a certain quantity that you might find in the Mishnah and all the halacha svar, there's a quantity of whatever it is. We don't have to go into that until for another few months. But even the smaller amount is still, you're not chayav kares for eating on Yom Kippur if you have that smaller amount, but it's still going to be asur midoraisa. Similarly, if a person writes one letter, or one and a half letters, or half a letter, they won't be chayav midoraisa, they won't be liable for the punishments of kosev on Shabbos, but nevertheless it will still be asur, and asur even midoraisa. Then we pointed out, then we pointed out that if a person does malacha with a shinui, so here we were curious if the concept of shinui is only by writing, because by writing not only is it a difference in how you do it, you're doing it differently, you're doing it with a shinui, it's also different in the result. When you write with a shinui, it's all sloppy. As opposed to if you press the elevator bit with your butt, with your left hip, with some other part of your body, or you flick on a light on and off, there you're doing it, the act differently, but the result is an identical result. So at least by writing, if you do something with a shinui, or for example with your left hand, so left hand is only going to be a shinui. Shinui knocks something down from being asur daraisa to being asur only darabana. So if I write with my right hand, and if I'm a righty, I write with my right hand, I'm chayav asur daraisa. If I do that writing with my left hand, that will not be asur daraisa because of the shinui. Left hand will not help you to knock it down from daraisa to darabanan by turning on and off lights, by doing other things. But by writing, left hand will be significant of a change because it manifests itself in a messy penmanship. Question. The punishment means putter. There is no punishment. It's only asur midarabanan. There's no punishment. No. I said that there's something called chatzi shir asur min ha-Torah. There's something else which is putter, which is only putter of al asur midarabanan. So using your left hand is going to be asur midarabanan. It's putter of al asur. Putter from any consequence, from any punishment midaraisa. There's no skila, there's no kares, there's no kovar chatas. It's only asur darabanan. But if when we talk about quantities, like two letters as opposed to one letter, so two letters will get the chiyuv daraisa, one letter will still be asur midaraisa. There's no punishment for that.
So that's what I'm asking. One letter that's asur midaraisa.
Just like drinking a tiny sip on Yom Kippur. If I do this on Yom Kippur, that was asur daraisa, I will not get any punishment. Which is why if a person's very ill and has to drink, it's better to do that tiny sip, than to drink a full shir. That's when we need, if somebody's very sick, they're a diabetic, they have to drink or eat, but for life purposes, for pikuach nefesh purposes, so still you want to minimize the violations. You'd rather do something that you don't get punished, which is not as severe as violating an avera that you do get punished for. Okay, next point. Last week we discussed a very important mishnah that distinguished between different kinds of, we'll call it ink. If you have ink that's permanent kind of ink, that's asur daraisa. If you have ink that's non-permanent kind of ink, that's asur darabanan. What were examples of non-permanent kind of ink? Frosty windows during the winter. Dust on cars that say, please wash me. Writing with ketchup, writing with icing, with frosting on cakes and on cupcakes. Putting your fingers into the ketchup and writing your initials. Drawing your fingers in the sand, perhaps, as well. Those are all non-permanent kind of inks, or it doesn't have to be ink. It could be any non-permanent writing stuff. And that will only be asur midrabanan. What I don't know if I mentioned last week, is let's say you wrote with a permanent kind of ink, but on a writing recipient, a tablet or something, some kind of tablet that you wrote on, that will not last. For example, let's say you wrote on the example that's given in the poskim is you wrote on a leaf. You took a pen and you wrote on a leaf, L-E-A-F. And leaves wither. So even though you wrote it with a pen which is permanent, but since the material that you wrote on, like a leaf, is not permanent, it will just sort of wither away and eventually disintegrate, that will not be considered asur d'oraisa. Could we think of any other practical applications to... the second kind. For I know you're excited about the place. I want to keep you as excited as I can for it. The second kind, in terms of a tablet, that something that you write on that doesn't stay for a long time. Yes, I know. Let's say you have one of those things in the kitchen, like those disposable plastic containers that you send soup to your neighbor in, and you write on that with the permanent marker, but it doesn't really stay. A dry erase marker on that, and you could basically rub it off with your finger, is that what you mean? I would think, I'm not positive, but I would think that until you, it's not going to go away by itself. Ketchup isn't just going to stay in its form forever. That mark will stay there until you erase it, right? Unless you're saying if you just, if it will just fade, then it might be asur d'rabbanan. And also sometimes when you just touch it, you're washing it, for example. No, that's erasing it. Sometimes just as you're carrying it around, like on a yogurt container, right? Let's say there's a yogurt in the fridge, and it's a company fridge, or it's a school fridge, and you want to write, like, Uri's yogurt, don't touch. It's the only kosher one here. Please don't touch it. And you try to write your name with a pen, and it doesn't really stay, and anyone, but just by touching the yogurt container, it's sort of going to fade away. That might be pater. What was your case? Dry erase markers. You know, I think it's there until you erase it. If you write a dry erase marker on a dry erase board, I think it's there until you erase it, and that's called permanence. Just because it's erasable, that's still called permanence. Impermanent means it's not going to stay there. Like, if you have something in the frosting, when the temperature inside and outside equate one with another, then the frosting will just disappear. If it's the sand, the wind will slowly, or the rain will just wash it away. You're talking about a case where you wrote. It's also possible to erase, like a pencil. That's considered permanent. Yeah.
Writing, I guess you have to writing something that's programmed to erase.
That we'll talk about. We'll talk. You're saying if you're writing in something that's programmed to self-destruct.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Right. Got it. Right. Okay. I said Instagram and I was corrected, right?
I'm sorry?
I said Instagram last week and I was corrected for the Snapchat. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. What about what? I don't think wet sand will stay there so permanently. I mean, if you're making a dish, there might be in it, that's what we talk. Okay. Let's continue. That was all last week. Go ahead. Excellent, fabulous question. I was actually going to get there. Like there's a game. My kids have a game, not Twister. Twister's a little bit different. But there's a game. What is it called? My kids have a game. It's like an alphabet game. It's good for like people younger than you. So my kids have a game that you have to like make a, it's for kids who are learning the alphabet and want to train them to, what? Yeah, you have to sort of, okay, stand like an A. Or, stand like a Y, however it is. So we're going to talk about that soon. I'll just, it's easier for me if I go in order. Okay, so I just want to... Okay, what about writing on your skin? Writing on your skin with a pen. We're not talking about tattooing. Writing on your skin with a pen, right? We all remember how to cheat in high school. So, especially, it's easier for girls, you have some level of tznius, you want to make sure your elbows are covered, your wrists are covered, whatever level of tznius, so for some reason before finals, you find yourselves much more tznuim, I guess, and with guys, the best way is always under your watch. Because then, no one, your watch is there, so, even if you have to roll up your sleeves, your watch still stays there. Okay, so if you write on your skin, let's say you want to cheat for your Sunday test, so you're studying on Shabbos, and you're writing on, okay, really bad, don't do it, but is that asur d'oraisa? The answer is yes, it's an explicit mishnah. If you write on your basar, on your flesh, that will be asur d'oraisa. Interestingly enough, even though the skin naturally regenerates itself, the cells die and fall off, or whatever, if you ever noticed, like, you wrote on yourself when you were little, and just a few days later, even if you try to scrub, you get off a lot, there's still stuff there. Magically, a few weeks later, it's not there. So, nevertheless, it's still also deraisa. Hold on a second. What happens if you have a letter that's used for an abbreviation? Like, let's say a letter, Dear Rabbi So-and-so, Dear R apostrophe. So is that R apostrophe, which you intended to mean Rabbi, which has R-A-B-B-I, five letters, but you had an R with an apostrophe. Is that considered one letter or two letters? What do you say?
Two.
So you would say that you're Chayav. What? Let's assume there is an opinion who holds that marks are considered Asa Daraisa. We hold that only letters are considered Asa Daraisa, not marks. Right, so symbol, regular symbols don't, we pass them that they don't. That they don't. But here it's not just an R with an apostrophe. Here's an R with an apostrophe that means R-A-B-B-I. Yeah, if you see Dear Reb R-Orlean or Dear MR, that's, what's another symbol that we use with one letter and apostrophe? Fine, R with an apostrophe. Resh, Reb Yossi Omer. Resh, apostrophe Yossi Omer. So here again, the Mishnah says that's called a no trikon in Hebrew. No trikon is an abbreviation. That is only Aser Drabanan. That is not considered two letters, Mida Araisa. How about an interesting question? I mentioned before Ktav Ashurit, Ktav Ashurit, that the Sifrei Torah are written in. Now, if you ever look closely at a Sefer Torah, at the Parshas of a Tefillin, maybe you went with a nephew or something when he was getting his tefillin for his bar mitzvah, maybe, or maybe you saw Megillah up close, you'll notice that some of the letters have crowns on top of them. They're called tagim, a tag, a singular for that little tiny crown. It looks like a tiny line with a dot, like a pinhole on top of his head, which Chazal like to call them zions. A dot on top of a straight line. Now, there are three such tagging on top of number of letters. Does anyone know which letters get these crowns, these tagging? Not resh. What? Shin is one of them. Not a tav. Ayin is one of them. I'll give you a hint. There's seven. We don't have to guess. Does anyone know the way to remember them? Not a pay. Shatnez gets. Shatnez, shin, ayin, tes, nun, zayin, gets, gimel, tzadi. Those are the seven out of the 22 letters that do get tagin. So, what would happen if a person writes letters without the, you write letters in Hebrew on Shabbos, but you leave out those tagin? So if it would be a Sefer Torah, that might be a problem, theoretically. If you write a Sefer Torah, it's a problem. Yeah. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that, oh no, it's not a problem. I'm sorry. The opposite. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that if you write a Sefer Torah without them, well, even though, so they are considered letters for writing a Sefer Torah, even if you forgot the tagin, so similarly it will be considered writing, even if you get the tagin. It's just interesting because I wanted to tell you about Shatnez Getz. So ignore that. Fine. So anyway, Shatnez Getz is Aser. What about, look at the parochas, please. You see on top of the parochas, it says, Kimi Tzion Tzei Tzei Sarah. Now, those letters were not written. They were embroidered. Or let's not even talk about embroidered. Let's say you just have to fasten the letter to the, you have a letter, and you fasten the letter to the velvet, parochas. Or if you remember when you were working in kindergarten, like some of you do, and you have letters and you attach them to paper. So, you're not writing, but you're putting the letter on a paper. So is that going to constitute kosev? Well, scrapbooks. Scrabble. We'll have to talk about Scrabble another. I'm scared to talk. Yeah, let's not talk about that because that's not really attaching. That'll be another shiur. I didn't prepare that. So the Mishnah Berurah says, again, I don't know if it's Asa Daraisa, but to connect, even if there's like a plate, let's say these letters on the parochas would sort of pin on or clip on or fasten on with a safety pin. Well, let's say a letter falls off and you want to just take a safety pin on Shabbos, which you're allowed to put in safety pins on Shabbos, and reattach it, that will be Aser due to Kosev. Those are a bunch of points. Now I want to talk about, before we get to closed circuit TVs, I want to talk about the question that you asked about forming letters with your body, and the fascinating question that the Trumas Hadeshan asks. I told you why the Trumas Hadeshan is cool a few weeks ago, right? I don't remember why the Trumas Hadeshan is the coolest Shabbos Teshuvah Sefer among the Rishonim. Because he asks his own questions, right. So on one hand, you could argue, well, it's a positive and a negative. On one hand, you could learn from the questions themselves because they were asked by an intelligent Talmud Chacham as opposed to other Sefer Shabbos Teshuvahs where the questioner could be a dodo head. And just because he's assuming something doesn't mean it's true. Here is written by the Trumas Hadeshan himself. On the other hand, listen, there's an interesting point. If a Rav is asked a question, there's a certain siyata deshmaya that guides the Rav or the Gadol in answering that shayla. So if a person is asking a question and the Rav has to respond with his psak, there's a siyata deshmaya that guides him, and there's a certain siyata deshmaya that guides the posik to whatever psak he arrives at, which you lack when a person's just sort of writing a book with questions and answers. So that's something to keep in mind, positive and negative, strengths and weaknesses of this kind of style. So, the shayla was asked by a Trumas Hadeshan, meaning he asked the following shayla. Can you, I'm going to write my name, you are I. Can I do that on Shabbos? So you all are going to say, you definitely... Thank you. Perfect timing. Couldn't ask anything better. Yes, the Trumas Hadeshan says you can. But he says, Echad min ha'gdolim says it's asr. And he wants to know why, with this Echad min ha'gdolim, I have no idea to whom he's referring, there is one of these gdolim in the Rishonim who say that you're not allowed to. Why would anyone say that you can't take your fingers and draw a letter in the air? So for this, what's that? You're going to have to work hard on that one. So, for this, you have to have learned Makkeh B'Patish, which, Baruch Hashem, we did. As I want to share with you, because it's a Makkeh B'Patish question. So, when the Gemara talks about Makkeh B'Patish, literally, Makkeh B'Patish is you take a hammer and you bang it on a something. Makkeh B'Patish. The Gemara talks about banging a hammer on an anvil. For all those of you who don't know, an anvil is a chunk of metal. And the Gemara says, what could be wrong with banging a hammer on a chunk of metal? You're not doing anything to the hammer. You're not doing anything to the chunk of metal. Why? What's Makkeh B'Patish about that? Before telling you what the Gemara concludes, the Gemara has one suggestion, and it's a fascinating suggestion. The Gemara says, because you are me'amein et yadav. What's le'amein? Close. That's a borrowed term, right? You go to the gym to do imunim, right?
Training.
Training, correct. 100% correct. Yes, training. To train your hand. Meaning, if you have before I get to metal, did you ever go golfing? Do you ever watch golfing? Okay, so let me show you. So you go golfing, and you stand there with your feet at shoulder width from each other, perpendicular to the direction, right? I want to shoot that way, so I'm standing perpendicular. And then I take you do it with two hands. You lock your elbows, and then you don't swing. You just go like this, like 12 times. To figure out exactly, then you look here and there, and you pretend you know what you're doing. And you look all around, and you practice to see what angle you're going to hit at, what force you're going to hit at, what you're doing right then, and there is what? You're training your hand. Similarly, but differently, basketball players also, sometimes when they get a foul shot, before the referee hands them the ball, they sometimes sort of go like, and sort of, wave their wrists, and then they get the ball, and then they shoot, just to me'amein et yadav. Similarly, says the Gemara, perhaps the reason why there's an issur called Makkeh B'Patish on an anvil, chunk of metal, you're not doing anything, you're not fixing anything, you're not making any tool, but you're training your hand, suggests the Gemara, for knowing how hard the metal worker should bang this piece of silver or gold that he or she is working on. So therefore, maybe training your hand should be what this Makkeh B'Patish is. The Gemara says, no, how could you say that training yourself is aser? that means you're not allowed to go watch people, you know, can't watch people build a building because you're training to build. You can't watch people, you know, metal workers work the metal because you're training to. Anyway, let's just draw one point out of that Gemara. Perhaps, says the Trumas Hadashin, that one Gadol who wanted to say that you're not allowed to form letters in the air is because you're training your hand to write. Somebody here knows my daughter Ariella, and just a few months when that wonderful teacher who's in this room was teaching my daughter the alphabet, my daughter would come home and she would practice in the air letters. That's just how she practiced letters. So that is absolutely me'amein et yadav. And perhaps that might be the problem that the Gemara described of the metal worker who bangs a metal on an anvil, a hammer on an anvil, even though he's not creating anything. He's not fashioning anything. He's just practicing his stroke. Just like the golfer, just like the basketball player, that might be a problem of practicing your stroke. Perhaps that's what Trumas Hadashin suggests. It might be a problem to practice your letter shaping. Nevertheless, that is mutter. That's what the Trumas Hadashin says. This gadol might have felt, but he is rejected. Trumas Hadashin says halach l'maisa, and this does make its way to the Shulchan Aruch, where the Rama, who actually quotes a lot of Trumas Hadashins, the Rama does say that it is permitted to write letters in the air. And similarly, the post can apply it to your question: when you want to form letters out of your body or body contortions or with other people. And I heard of a fabulous scavenger hunt. That one of the questions on the scavenger hunt. There was once, 2-3 years ago, they were trying to think of an activity for the shul to do, and one of them was a scavenger hunt, and this is one of the things that had come up of a different shul or something had done the following. You have to take a picture in front of Yankee Stadium with how many, 4 or 5 people on your team, and your bodies have to be in the shape of the word Yankees. I don't know what they expected. I don't know how you do that, but that would be mutter on Shabbos, in case you were wondering. That is the first half of the shiur. The second half of the shiur, I want to talk about more technological issues. Any questions on this first half? Yeah. So let's. I didn't prepare magnets and those games like Etch-a-Sketch and Doodle Face, whatever. We'll leave that for afterwards. I'd like to. Okay, excellent question. So that's going to be the beginning of this, the following discussion. So let's say you're in the following question. I got a Shaila recently. Yes.
Oh, sorry, I have a question.
Go ahead. Right.
And adding the letter to complete the word. Let's say if you have a word that came off, the word back complete the sentence.
Excellent question. If you're not just adding a letter, but you're putting on a word, I would assume that that should be, even though you're not spelling the letter, you're still attaching letters to a background. I think that would at least be asa d'rabbanan. I don't know if it would be d'raisa, but I don't know if this whole fascinating thing is d'raisa. I'm sorry, I don't think it's Daraisa, but I think it would still be Asa D'Rabbanan, whether it's one letter or a series of letters, a word, yeah.
Would that be similar if you have a book with the pages of it?
Excellent question. I happen to have seen the postgum talk about that exact Shaila, that you're not supposed to fasten together, not even fasten together, you're not supposed to join together pages that are separate when you have a ripped page, especially like a sitter, you're not supposed to join together the pages to be able to read them one next to the other. The Mishnah talks about a funny case. It's not so funny, it's not so hilarious, but it's interesting. The Mishnah talks about the following. It says, you're chayav d'araisa if you write two letters on corners. You see the left corner and the right corner? So they could be read one with another, the aleph and the beis. But what happens if I have an aleph on one side of the wall, on one wall, and on the parallel wall I have a beis, so I wrote an aleph there, on Shabbos morning, I walked across the room, and on the parallel wall, I wrote a beis. That I'm not chayev. Why? Because they're not read together. They're not nehegim ze im ze. They're not read, or they're not read together with your eye.
But
it's still asa d'rabbanan. Correct. Similarly, If I would write one on the floor and one on the ceiling, I'm also, even though I wrote two letters, that's the quantity of the shir of Ksiva Doraisa, I'm still not chayev. Why? Because they're not read one with the other. And what was your question again? Right. So the Gemara speaks about, if you write, you have a piece of paper. In, anyone here have been to the Galil? Who here was in Tveria? Okay, who here was in Amuka? I'm sorry. Okay, so in, the Gemara says, if somebody writes a letter on a piece of paper in Tveria, and then they go to Tzipori, who here was in Tzipori? Okay, the person who asked about Ksav Ivri was in Tzipori. Fine. You're there, you're in Tzipori? Who else is in Tzipori? Historically. Who was in Tzipori? Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah, the Sanhedrin. Correct, that's right. The Sanhedrin was based after the Churban Habayis Sheni. The Romans destroyed Yerushalayim, so where was the Torah center of the world? In Tzvera. That's why a lot of these stories, anecdotes in the Gemara are talk about anecdotes in Tveria, in Tzipori, in things that happened along the way from this city, Tveria, Tzfat. Those areas were where the Torah center was after Churban Bayis Sheni. So the Gemara talks about, I'm in Tveria and I write a letter on a piece of paper. I go on a hike to Tzipori and I write a piece of paper and I write a letter on a piece of paper. Says the Gemara, I'm Chayav. Wait a second, I don't understand. If I write a letter on that wall and I walk 30 steps to that wall, I'm Pater. But if I hike all the way from Tveria to Tzipori, I'm going to be Chayav? The Gemara answers, the reason why you're going to be Chayav is because there's a piece of paper there. And a piece of paper, you can't take walls and bring them together. You can't take the piece of paper that was written in Tveria and left there, and the piece of paper that's sitting in Tzipori and just join them together. And that would be a problem. What do you see from that? You see from that, that even a piece of paper that's written here and written there, just joining them together could be a problem. So therefore, it will be usur if you have a sitter and you want to read it more easily. I never knew this until yesterday, so thank you for bringing it out, because it's very halacha l'maisa. This is probably the only real halacha l'maisa point that we've learned thus far, because until now, everything we discussed is usur, just a question of usur mida rabbanon or usur mida araisa. Finally, we have a case that actually somebody might do on Shabbos. Have a sitter, you want to read it like Shmash or an essay, those are usually the ones that are a little whatever. You put the page together to read it more easily, that would be a problem. I don't know if it's the Raisa Drabana, maybe it's only Drabana because there's no active writing there. However, the poskim say if you're just closing the sitter and that's what happens when it closes, when you close it, you don't have to close it sloppily on purpose. If you close it normally and it happens to push the pages to fit in their regular shape, and they happen to come together, that's fine. But to purposely join the pages so you could read it better, that will be a problem. That will be awesome. Yeah.
What about writing and binding on
the book? That we're going to talk about not this week.
Sorry.
Great. Okay. So now let's talk about, I got a question from a very wonderful family who recently had a child, and the child was in bedroom one, they have their own bedroom, and they have the child in another room. And because of the way the walls are situated, so they're not able to really hear through the walls. So the question was, could they have a baby monitor? We use a baby monitor, which is a little video, black and white, just does not record, if I remember correctly, it does not record. But you see in real time what's happening in the other room. So the question is, could you have that on Shabbos? Because you don't do any malach on Shabbos, you just set it up on Friday and it happens to record whatever passes in front of it, whatever sounds, you know, obviously you want to hear if there's crying. Similarly, hospitals, in fact yeshivas, have closed circuit TVs. When you walk somewhere, you go into, I don't know, maybe the front of our building right here has, if you come to shul to shank on Shabbos morning, I don't know if you will be recorded or not, but if there is a TV, you will be recorded. And you're walking up the steps into Shank, or is going to be on the screen in the security office, deep in the bowels of Belfour Hall, where they have a room with 30 screens, and they do. They have a room full of screens, and there's a guy who just sits there watching the screens. There, I think everything is recorded, which is good, because if you ever get your laptop stolen, they can watch that whatever doorway was accessed, or to they could watch the film to find out who took it. So what about those closed circuit TVs? What about the following? Now this is a real Shaila, and I mean, let's say you're in a building that when you wanna go, you wanna knock on the door. So you're not gonna ring the bell, but let's say you sort of stand in front of a little, again, instead of a buzzer like we have in our buildings, but you stand in front of a tiny camera, and it, I guess, I don't know how they know. Let's say there's just one guard inside. It's not up to different apartments, but the guard sees your face, and if you look safe, then he'll let you in. So you didn't press any buttons, but you're standing in front of the, here you're doing it on purpose. That's the difference between this case and the previous two cases. You're purposely standing in front of this little camera so you could be seen, so that they'll open your door. So these are all questions that I want to talk about now. Basically, is not photographic, but is video, or photographic also, is that considered writing? Are you writing on that screen when you walk in front of a TV camera and you're, whatever you do with your body, moving and smiling and clapping and waving, that's appearing on that, that's being written on a screen. So before we get into talking about the details, we have to know a Rambam. The Rambam tells us that even though the Mishnah spoke about writing in the context of two letters, says the Rambam, so too tsar tsura. Tsar in the verb form, a tsura. What's to be tsar tsura? What's a tsura? A figure, a drawing, a painting. Tsar tsura, if you draw a figure, if you make a painting, even though there is no letters involved, there are no numbers involved, there are no symbols involved, you're just drawing a picture, that, says the Rambam, that will be, I think he says that will be an issur d'oraisa of kosev, roshem, which is a match or subcategory or tolda or of sorts of kosev, is roshem, making a marking. And therefore, says the Rambam, that will be also d'oraisa. I think he holds it's d'oraisa to draw a picture. That's the first point. So what, therefore, our question is, when you appear before a camera and you're doing whatever you're doing, even you're walking in front of a camera, that is drawing a picture of your body walking in front of, on that screen, wherever that screen will be situated. But before we go into the details, what about the following? Let's say it's a sunny day. Can I walk in the sun such that I have a shadow? Of course I can, right? That's obvious. How about the following? Could I do bunny ears in a shadow so that so-and-so looks like he has bunny ears? What about this? Can I make a shape of a letter in the shadow so that there's an A or a Y and an A-N-K-E-E-S? Could I do that in a shadow on Shabbos? Making letters? Yes. The Poskim say if you're just making pictures in the shadow, that's okay. That's mutar, I think, l'chatchila. So maybe we could argue that's exactly what's happening. There's no mamashas, there's no physical manifestation whatsoever. When you have writing, whether it's with ketchup or with orange juice or with ink or with all the, or with sand, there's some mamashas, there's some physical stuff that's there, that's taking the shape of a letter, or that's the shape of the outline of a letter. Here, there's nothing. It's maybe photons. Maybe photons and light waves at best. Same with a shadow, that's totally fine, right? Or maybe a computer monitor is more than that. That's the first. So we have the first point of introduction was that the Rambam holds that painting or drawing is asur d'oraisa. Shadows are mutter. One more point. Are you allowed to look at a mirror on Shabbos? I have a feeling that there might be some people in the room who have done it. Let me tell you a story. What? Let me tell you a story. There was once a person who looked in the mirror. And there's a Gemara, an explicit Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that says that it's usur for a man to look in the mirror on Tuesdays. It's Beged Isha. Tosa, the Unklus translates the word, Losel Bashgever Simlasi Shah, man should not dress like a woman. Tosa says Lo yatkin gavra tikune itata. A man shouldn't set himself up, fix himself up, tweaking their eyebrows or whatever other feminine kinds of cosmetic ways of taking care of their, you know. Men shouldn't do that, even if it's not talking about specifically skirts and blouses and whatever clothing specifically. So the Gemara applies that looking in a mirror is the kind of thing that a woman would do and not a man. And therefore, the Gemara says explicitly that it will be usur for a man to look in a mirror on Shabbos. How do I know this is true? This is true. Yeah, so far I haven't been lying. The next point is equally indicative of what the Gemara says. Sherlock Holmes, anyone read Sherlock Holmes? Okay, my friend Watson. So a story in Sherlock Holmes, they were trying to find the murderer, the thief, and whatever it was. I don't remember the whole story, but the point that I have to bring out of the story, the Sherlock Holmes story, is that there was a mirror somewhere, or a show window that was like a reflective kind of window, and the person who's dressed as a woman passed by and didn't look in the mirror to just check themselves, and Sherlock Holmes says, it must be a man dressed up as a woman. So, a raya from Sherlock Holmes to the Gemara. In case our Amunah was faltering, Baruch Hashem, Sherlock Holmes comes to save us. So, it happens to be, in case any of you have relatives who are male who have looked in a mirror on Shabbos, you could still eat their food, you could still trust their kashas, because the Ran says that nowadays men do look in mirrors. And therefore, it's no longer the kind of thing that's a beggis and las isha. So therefore, for example, if you live in Scotland and men start wearing kilts, it will be okay for, just like men will be able to wear kilts because that's what men started doing, 900 years ago, the Ran lives, let's say 800, 900 years ago, men started looking in mirrors, so it will also be permitted for men to look in mirrors on Tuesdays. On Shabbos, however, everyone's not allowed to look in a mirror. I'm still serious. Both men and women are not allowed to look in mirrors on Shabbos. Why is that? The Gemara says this. The reason is because the mirrors that they had in those days had sharp edges. It wasn't like a beautiful molding around it or part of a medicine cabinet. They had little chips of whatever, a little, you know, chip of glass that had a shine or reflection. And Chazal were scared that if you look in the mirror, you have a long hair, or my beard's a little too whatever, I could take a hair and run it across the razor sharp edge of the mirror and slice off a piece of hair. So therefore, as a gzeira d'rabbanan, I don't come to do gozes. Gozes is shearing wool, and it's also cutting your hair, it's also cutting your nails, and also cutting your cuticles, and also cutting off those little tiny bits of skin on the around your lips that you get during the winter. That's all gozes. And Chazal were worried that if you look in a mirror on Shabbos, again, these don't apply to our mirrors, but the Gemara does say this. In the time of the Gemara, when the mirrors had sharp edges, we're worried that you might cut off a hair on that sharp edge of the mirror. But let's just point something out. What's the concern with looking in a mirror? Only that you might come to cut off a hair. But is looking in a mirror a problem? Obviously not. From the fact that the Gemara said that it's usur to look in the mirror because you might come. That means the looking itself is fine. Wait a second. When you look in a mirror, what do you see there? A drawing of yourself. It looks remarkably like you, right? A beautiful drawing of exactly what you look like. So you see it's clearly mutter, right? Okay. So now we have to come to talk about closed circuit TVs. Let's think of, again, we're not getting into the nitty-gritty of the details, which is obviously much exceedingly complex. We're going to do it in the next 10 minutes. We'll cover everything in the next 10 to 14 minutes. The issues at hand when it comes to closed-circuit TVs and baby monitors and walking in front of cameras, or let's say somebody's taking a video and you just happen to, you know, in Manhattan, it could happen. A few years ago, they were doing I don't remember what movie they were doing on the steps going up from Overlook to Fort Wash. They were filming some, anyone know the name of the movie? I was never good at arts and entertainment and Trivial Pursuit. There's some movie that they did there, fine. So could you walk in front of the movie camera? You want to be in a movie, right? Oh, but it's Shabbos. Okay, so could you be in the movie? That's the question. So let's think about the issues at hand. The issues at hand are, you remember we talked about writing with a shinui? So if I write with my left hand, for example, or the other examples that the Mishnah gives is I write with my mouth, with my elbow, I write with my toes, right? You've heard of people who, you know, lose their hands and they still, you know, compete in the Olympics and they do all kinds of other things and they write with their toes. So if I do that on Shabbos, that's only also the Rabbanan. So let me ask you, if you're walking to shul, is that the way you write? Is that the way you draw pictures? No, you're walking to shul. That's not darko b'kach, that's not the way you do a malacha. So just like doing it with your left hand is not darko b'kach, so that's not asur d'oraisa. Similarly, walking to shul, and you happen to be videoed as you walk into shul, that's not going to be darko b'kach. That's not the way writing, the way kosev, the way drawing pictures are done. And therefore, it will not be asur d'oraisa. And that's the opinion of Rebbe Yashiv. That's what Rebbe Yashiv says. Rebbe Yashiv says that even though you're drawing a picture by standing in front of and moving in front of a video camera, since it's not darko b'kach, it's not the normal way that people draw pictures by walking or doing whatever else you're doing, or picking up a baby in front of a baby monitor, it will not be asur d'oraisa, it will only be asur, it will nevertheless be asur d'rabbanan. There's another possibility that we could throw into, another thought that we could throw into the hopper. We talked about the permanence, the relative permanence of different kinds of inks. Well, how long is that image on the screen when you walk in front of, it's changing as you move. It's changing as you move or as you pick up the baby, as you walk by, whatever video you're being videoed on, it's moving, so it changes. So that's a great, you know, example of something that doesn't stay permanent. It's not miskayem. It's just like an impermanent, a non-permanent type of writing, like ketchup and like frosting and like frosting on a cake and frosting on the windows of the humidity. So therefore, that's the reason why one of the other gedolim, Rav Nissen Karelitz, I think, says, Rav Nissen Karelitz from Bnei Brak, he holds that walking in front of a video camera will only be asur d'rabbanan, because it's not miskayim, it's not a permanent kind of marking. It's there now, and in a split second, the figure on the TV screen changes. So therefore, these two poskim, Rebbe Yashiv and Rebbe Nissen Karelitz, hold that walking in front of a screen, moving in front of a video monitor, will not be asur d'oraisa, but is nevertheless asur midrabbanan. It will not be asur d'oraisa, but it will nevertheless still be asur midrabbanan. Why is it not d'oraisa? Rebbe Yashiv says it's not d'oraisa because it's not the way you normal people write. Rebbe Nissen Karelitz says it's not asur d'oraisa because it's not a permanent kind of writing. So two different reasons why it might not be asur d'oraisa. Yes. Yes, it will be worse. Until now, I was talking about only the more lenient kind, which is just you happen to walk by a security camera. The baby monitor is going to be worse because you're setting up and you want to have that image there. You're setting up so you can have that image. So it will be perhaps worse. I'm not going to say it's definitely going to be daraisa, but it will be theoretically worse. Hold on. It was a busy day today. I didn't have so much time today. However, and you're all waiting for this, however, especially those of you who live in Manhattan, I don't hear anyone here lives in Manhattan, love your building, all of your buildings probably have video cameras. However, says Rebbe Yashiv, that b'sh'as hatzorech, one can be makel, and walk in front of a video camera, or be photographed by a video camera, for the following reason. The reason is, that forget about what kind of writing are you doing. Are you doing a writing that's permanent or not permanent? Are you doing a writing that's going to, that's the way people write or not going to write? What are you doing? You're walking home. You're walking into shul. You're doing whatever, you're walking into a hospital. You're visiting somebody in the hospital room. Your intention is no way whatsoever even related to drawing a picture on some security screen somewhere in the basement. That's not your kavana, that's not your das. It's maybe like a psik resha. It ends up, you did it and it ended up happening, but it was not your intention whatsoever. It's like you opened up the refrigerator and the light went on. That happens to be also daraisa, but we won't talk about that. Says Rabbi Yashiv, here maybe it should be more lenient because it wasn't your kavana whatsoever. It's not, you weren't like doing an act of writing. You're just walking home, or walking into the building, or walking into the hospital. So therefore, because of that svara, again, if it's a sha'as hatzorech, like you have to visit somebody in a hospital, or perhaps, I was speaking to Rosh Hechter about this point this afternoon, our Beis Medrash, our yeshiva, I'm assuming, I'm pretty confident, has a video camera that's in the ceiling that watches everybody who walks in Taglach. So, I guess it's a sha'as hatzorech to be able to go to shul, and since it's not your intention whatsoever, this is the key line, Leslie, because when you want to set up a situation where a person will be seen, that you're setting up before Shabbos, so that you could make sure you will see the person, you don't have this heter of sha'as hatzorech. But if it's a scenario where you're just doing your thing, it happens to be that somebody else is videoing you, there, you couldn't care less or care more or less, or it's meaning that's not what you're trying to do, you're just trying to walk into your house or walk into a hospital or a Beis Medrash, and there, Rabbi Yashiv will be willing to be mekel b'sha'as hatzorech to, yes, permit it. So, halacha l'maisa. We are going to say that normally writing is, appearing in a video is going to be asa d'rabbanan, either because it's not permanent or because it is not the normal way of writing. However, Rabbi Yashiv is mekel b'sha'as hatzorech in a situation of need to be mekel because you're not involved in anything writing. Your intention is nothing to do with drawing pictures, making images. Your intention is just getting to the room, getting home, getting wherever you're going. So b'sha'as hatzorech, in case of need, like visiting somebody in a hospital, going to shul, and for security purposes, the shul has to have a video camera, there, Rabbi Yashiv would be mekel. Yes. So that's why I started off with the Rambam. The Rambam expanded what the Mishnah wrote by Kosei, which the Mishnah wrote, HaKosei Shtei Osias. The Rambam expanded that to include Hatzar Tzura, that if you draw a picture also. That's a picture of a hand. I think so, yeah. That would be very nogeh by a baby monitor. If you have a baby monitor that's focused into the crib, so you're not going to like go duck your head and smile into the monitor and, you know, wave to whoever's, you're just going to stick your hand in. That's a picture of a hand, I think. Somebody else had their...
No, I'm not sure. You have to be careful to turn off your baby monitor before shots.
Yes. That is correct. That is correct. That is correct. You have to be careful to turn off your baby monitor. That's correct.
Is there any difference between your voice and your video?
Yeah. Everything that we've been talking about is video, is the video component. Because there's co-save. The voice component will be more of a microphone issue. That's a whole different issue.
A still issue.
It will be a problem. Yes. Yes. Regarding the baby monitor, I spoke both to Rebel Willig and Rebel Yosh. Yosh is it sound? Lahavdil. I spoke both to Rabbi Willig and I spoke to Rabbi Shachter regarding baby monitors. Both of them said the same exact thing, that it should not be used on Shabbos. Let's finish off with one point. Or 2 points. So, what do you say about... Let me finish off with the Kula, and then I don't know if we'll talk about the second thing. There is an opinion of Rabbi Tzalel Stern. I don't really know who he is. I do see him quoted. He has a number of Svarim, Shas, Tshuva Svarim, contemporary, called Betzel Chachma. And he talks about a very interesting thing, and he has a very interesting opinion. Are you familiar with these photogray lenses for glasses? Is that the word, photogray? That they're, when people go outside, they get dark, or when you go indoors, they become light? So first I'll tell you a funny story. The story is about Reb Chaim Kanievsky's wife, right? I think it's Reb Chaim Kanievsky's wife goes into some petition in Bnei Brak, and something comes up about these photogray lenses, and she says, oh, I don't know what to do. My father says this, my husband says that. So the petition says, lady, what do you care about what your father says? Just ask a rab. Her father's Reb Yashiv, and her husband's Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Okay. So I'll tell you what Reb Tzalo Stern's shita about photogray lenses. He says the following. As we said before, are you allowed to look in a mirror on Shabbos? You're allowed to look in a mirror on Shabbos, except if you'll tear a piece of your hair off. If you're not going to be tearing a piece of your hair off, which most of us haven't done in the past certainly a few weeks, it's mutter to look in a mirror on Shabbos. So that's a given, looking in a mirror on Shabbos. I have a very simple question. We said you're not allowed to write with ketchup or with icing or with frosting in the window because that's ksav she'eno miskayem. It's non-permanent, it's temporary writing. Why isn't looking in the mirror writing, temporary writing? Why is that mutter? It must be, says Reb Tzalo Stern, it must be that writing is defined by connecting two stuffs together. You have ketchup on the table. You have dust on a dusty car. Or even if you're not connecting two things together, you're making an imprint on whatever is there, a physical imprint on whatever is there. When you look in a mirror, you're not connecting two things together. You're not making an imprint, a physical imprint on anything that's there. It's just the way the mirror works is that you appear when you pass in front of it. Well, accordingly, he applies the same heter to photo gray glasses. They get lighter, they get dark in the sun, and they get light when you're indoors. Is there anything that was put on anything else? Are you allowed to paint a wall on Shabbos? No. It's a veya. You let to paint a sheet of paper blue, no figures, no pictures, no letters? No. Soveya. But that's because you're applying paint to a surface. But here, by a mirror, it's mutter. It must be because you didn't apply anything. You didn't make any imprint on it on the surface. Similarly, says Reb Tzalo Stern, just like by photogray lenses, similarly, photogray lenses will be permitted because you're not putting it, even though it is going from black to white, to white to black, you're not putting any application onto the glass, nor are you making any imprint in the glass. It just happens that this material, this kind of, the way the chemical compound of this glass works is that when it's in light, it gets darker. When it's not in light, it gets lighter. That's what he says by photogray lenses. Now, that's one tshuva. He has another tshuva that he says, based on what I said, based from a mirror, where there's no, you know, marking or imprint, or application by a mirror, so to photogray glasses, he says there's also nothing wrong. Again, get this. This is the opinion of the Betzel Chachma, one of the contemporary poskim. There's nothing wrong, according to him, to walk in front of a video camera at all. It's not also derabbanan. It's not just b'shas hatzorach. It's mutar lechatchila, he says. Why? Because, again, it's interesting because there's only proof. He has one proof. Usually for psak like this, you would bring 5 Gemaras and 7 sources. It's interesting. He just brings one proof, and the proof is what I told you. It's a very short tshuva. One proof from the fact that a mirror is mutter, so too, it must be that things are mutter if there's no application, so too, when you walk in front of a video camera, nothing is applied, there's no imprint, and therefore, it will be mutter, according to this opinion, to walk in front of a video camera, and presumably, in front of a baby monitor, it would be mutter, according to this opinion. And I just want to point out, I don't think this is the classical opinion. There is one opinion who says this, but I don't think that's the classical psak among the contemporary poskim. I think most poskim assume it will be asur derabanan, probably not deraisa. There are poskim who say it's deraisa also. So we have some say deraisa. He says it, as I explained, based on a mirror, that's mutar lechatchila. I think most poskim hold that it is asur derabanan, to pass in front of a video camera on Shabbos. Again, B'shas HaTzorech, Rabbi Yashiv said, B'shas HaTzorech, one can be Mekel if your intention is not at all to have anything to do with a video camera. You just happen to be wanting to go to shul. So we'll stop here. And next week we'll have to see if we'll have a regular shiur or it will be Pesach or we'll see what's happening in my life.